Welcome to the Golden Fusion Podcast, the show where we have conversations with some of the most interesting and inspiring people here in Central Illinois. I'm your host, Paul Garcia, and today my guest is none other than Chase Mowry, a former Fairbury, Illinois resident who has since moved to Oklahoma only after living in India for a while, and he has also worked for a few big-name nonprofit organizations and is just one of the most kind-hearted, well-liked, well-rounded individuals that I have come to know. I'll tell you more about Chase in just 1 second, but first, lend me your ear for just 90 seconds as I grace your mind with information on 3 local and beloved businesses that you've probably already heard of, but never like this. Firstly, you may think that I talk quickly. Well, that's because I'm typically filled to the brim with the delicious and energizing coffee from the one and only coffee steamer in Fairbury and Forest, Illinois. Now me, I'm a bit of a coffee snob. I only accept the premium grade stuff, and the coffee steamer has just that. Their coffee is beyond tasty, and the baristas are beyond nice. If you haven't stopped by here for your daily coffee fix, man, you are missing out. For the perfect start to your day, get your coffee from the coffee steamer. Now, coffee is incredible, but you know what else could be incredible? Your home. But you might have some really rough furniture that you've just been putting up with for a while now. If an item immediately popped into your head when I said that, you might want to listen up. Fairbury Furniture offers gorgeous furniture from all the brands that you love, all at prices so low that they could outlimbo a snake. Now, when you go to a furniture store, you buy furniture, not a Lego set. You shouldn't need a degree in mechanical engineering just to set up your sofa, desk, or bed. Which is why Fairbury Furniture has a team that will come to your home to set up whatever furniture it is that you buy, at no additional charge. For the best furniture, best prices, and best customer service, head to Fairbury Furniture in Fairbury, Illinois. Now, we've talked about great coffee and great furniture, but the funny thing is, neither of those two things are going to help you to bring out your raw inner beauty. It's important to take pride in how you look and to feel confident in your appearance. That's where J. Marie's Salon and Day Spa steps in. If you've been secretly dying to get a bold, new haircut, now is the time to do it. My girlfriend recently got a bold, short, new haircut that's way different than her previous super long hairstyle, and dang, she looks stunning. J. Marie's Salon and Day Spa also offers manicures, pedicures, specialty massages, which I love, and much more. You're going to love this quality salon and day spa experience. Head to J. Marie's Salon and Day Spa in Fairbury or message them on Facebook to book an appointment today. Lastly, we all love coffee. We all love great furniture at great prices. We all love a quality salon and day spa experience. But you know what none of us love? Being out of shape and not knowing how to defend ourselves. Learn elite level self-defense skills and get into incredible shape by enrolling in the affordable, inviting, and high quality jiu-jitsu classes offered at PSF Legacy Jiu-Jitsu in Normal, Illinois. When I lived in Normal, I actually went here and it was fantastic. I didn't know a darn thing about jiu-jitsu, yet on the very first day, they just welcomed me in, made me one of their own, and I started picking up stuff really quickly. Jiu-jitsu is seriously all the rage these days, and it's only picking up steam. Get in shape, learn the martial art of jiu-jitsu, and gain some confidence when you enroll at PSF Legacy Jiu-Jitsu in Normal, Illinois. 5 classes a week, only $50 a month. Check this place out. PSF Legacy Jiu-Jitsu on Facebook. These fantastic local businesses are what make this show possible. You can show your support for the show and for the local economy by giving them a visit, and as always, let them know that the Golden Fusion Podcast sent you. They love to hear it. All right, there we have it. Without any further ado, here's my conversation with Chase Mowry. Chase Mowry, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be on. Surprised you asked me, but here we are.
Yeah, you really were. I really think, and you might cringe at this, I think you're a really interesting person. I've actually wanted you to come on to the show for a while. The reason I think you're interesting is because you're literally one of the most well-liked individuals that I've come to know. Kids love you. You're the type of guy growing up that old ladies would adore. You're a studious guy. You were an athlete. You did wrestling. You did football. You did extracurriculars, like you were in the plays. So you were always so active. You were quick to volunteer. It seemed, if I remember correctly, it seemed like you were a volunteer type of guy.
I mean, I grew up volunteering with my grandma. We would always go down to Meadows Mennonite Retirement Home over there and, you know, push old ladies around down to the beauty parlor pretty much every other Wednesday. Volunteering and service has always been a key aspect of my life, I think, as instilled in me by my grandma Mowry.
So I want to jump into that, but what I'm saying is that you were, dare I say it, you were kind of like a model student. You were an all-around good guy. But here's what's interesting. You're so well-rounded and so studious. You were on top of your schoolwork, and that shows now. But what makes you very interesting to me that I actually really think is cool is that most kids that are the caliber of student and athlete and have the extracurriculars that you do, they tend to not have time for much else. You could almost say a lot of them tend to be uptight. You have been a fun, loving guy for as long as I can remember, and that seems to be the opinion of a lot of other people. You were a goofball. You had a lot of friends. You just weren't the stereotypical really great student, but you were still a great student. And this notion that I have about you is kind of supported pretty well by your career path thus far. You've worked for multiple nonprofit organizations, and you went to India as well while you were in school at Monmouth College, where you majored in English as well as history, or was it just
English? I got a minor in history, yeah.
Got it. So, yeah. And then you were volunteering in various ways throughout that. My question is now, why are you like that? That's a rare combination of characteristics to have. Fun-loving, goofball, maybe even got into some trouble, but on top of your schoolwork, you were a volunteer, you were a great guy. It's just really interesting, and I want to know, why do you think you turned out to be that way?
Well, I already mentioned growing up doing service with my grandma, and so that was just kind of, I mean, it's just what I did. I mean, really, she was babysitting me, and so it's really what she did. But that certainly becomes a part of who you are when you're growing up, and it just, you just help other folks. One thing that really sticks out to me, when I was in second grade, we were doing, you know, this career goal pathway thing, and you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? I never really had a career pathway. When I was super young, I wanted to be a pirate. That didn't play out. I didn't really get to be a pirate. Johnny Depp and I probably should hang out.
You kind of got the facial hair, Johnny Depp.
The Johnny Depp facial hair right now? Yeah. Some people say I look like Jack Black at times. So I've lost a little bit of weight. Back the pounds back. Get back to Jack Black. And I wrote on that piece of paper, you know, I just want to make one person smile every day. I mean,
that was second grade.
As a second grader, I just want to make one person smile every day. I think that there's, and I don't mean to say that in some grandiose, you know, look at me sort of, you're a second grader saying that thing. I think it's just, you know, I guess that even in second grade, I kind of realized that life is tough, life is hard. People get in a lot of different scenarios, and you don't know what's going on in their brain. And if you can turn around and give somebody give that little dopamine, put that smile on their face, then you're doing something for the world.
How did you know that people go through rough times in second grade? Had you experienced something, or did you know someone firsthand who had went through some hard stuff?
I guess, or just maybe I was a little observant as a child. Probably, honestly, Paul, a lot of it. I mean, when you spend a lot of time in a nursing home, I think you know, there's a lot of wisdom that exists in a nursing home, and so I can't imagine that I didn't pick up a lot of wisdom from those folks that have lived life, that have experienced life, and realized what are, you know, true foundational principles of what it means to be a human being, what it means to be a citizen of the country, and how to act. And so I would imagine that was probably a piece of it. You know, I think kids go through all sorts of hardships. Sometimes it's, I don't get my ball. And sometimes, you know, it's situations that are outside of their control and be taken advantage of in different areas, and or just things that happen to them as youth. And kids are a lot more observant than I think we give them credit for, and maybe I was just that kid.
Wow. I think there's a lot of truth to that. I think most kids are not immersed in an environment full of people that have lived life like you were. You know, you went to the nursing home. Those people have lived life. Did you talk with them? I imagine you did.
Yeah, I mean, we'd push an old lady down a hallway to go get her hair done. She's going to talk. That's it. You know, the folks in nursing homes, they don't really have much else to do. And of course, they need that time. They need that bonding. I mean, that's a critical aspect. That community is a critical aspect of what it means to be a human. And so they were striving for the conversations. And I wouldn't be able to tell you a single name or a single conversation that I would have had. But if I'm just speculating, but I would imagine that I picked up a few bits of wisdom from those folks.
That fits really well with one of your careers that I want to talk about. That's when you were a mentor with the Big Brothers and Big Sisters program, that nonprofit program. And we'll get to that in just a second. But first, I want to talk about, you know, you left high school and went to Monmouth College. And that's where you stayed. You never transferred or anything like that. And that's where you majored in English and minored in history. But that's also where you got the opportunity to travel over to India for a semester?
Yep, about 4 months I spent in India.
And how'd you get that opportunity?
It's through the Associated College of the Midwest, so it's a consortium of small liberal arts colleges that kind of come together, and that was one of their programs. I mean, it was a full immersive program in what's called Pune. So most folks are familiar with Mumbai or Bombay. You know, they call it the Oxford of the East. A lot of colleges in that town. And it's expansive. I mean, it's 7-8 million people, and that's counted. I mean, that's not counting all the undocumented folks that are in India. India is the most populous democracy in the world. So there's a lot of folks over there. A lot of folks. So yeah, I went over there and studied Indian English and Indian politics and Indian history. But really, it was honestly, Paul, it was cheaper for me to go over to India for a semester than it would have been for me to go back to Monmouth for the semester. That program was cheaper than my room and board at Monmouth, so it was kind of a no-brainer.
Wow. Well, okay, you've told me that going to India was one of the best decisions you've ever made in your life. I am very curious to hear why that is. What was it like there? What were you learning while you were over there?
Yeah, I think when you get shocked, I think that's when you really learn a lot. When you get thrown into a situation that's all new and you got to figure it out. Obviously, I had a great support group. I mean, the program was so well done. I mean, year in, year out, American students from the Midwest are going over there and learning. And so the program was really, really easy to kind of acclimate yourself to in India. But, you're out traveling and you just learn so much about the world. You're learning how other people are living life. But really what I realized when I went over there is it don't matter if you're in India or Africa or Russia or China or Europe, South America, the United Midwest. The struggles of humanity and the joys of humanity are universal. I mean, the folks that were over there were having some of the same struggles that we're having here in the United States, just within a different context. It's just a different painting. But the emotions, the feels, the aches, the pains, the joys, the sufferings, the triumphs, the rejoicing, it's all the same. And obviously, saying that, it's like, well, that's, of course, humans are humans. But living there for 4 months, I wasn't visiting. If I had just gone and visited, I would have just been a tourist. But living there for 4 months, getting to interact, talk, having a host mom, it was just me and my host mom, which kind of replicated my life here, where it was just me and my mom living together. And so I'm really getting her point of view on life and her point of view on, again, going back to the wisdom of the elders, that those sorts of pieces are critical to what it means to be a human. And I think that's really what I learned. It doesn't matter what your scenario is. It doesn't matter your place in life. You're going to go through trials and tribulations, and you're going to go through suffering, and you're going to go through joy, and you're going to go through happiness. It's just the roller coaster of life. And it's incredible.
Before this podcast, when I was asking people kind of about you, a thing that was common among people's opinions was that you were a deep thinker. You were philosophical, if you would. And it kind of shows in just how you talk. It's very interesting to hear this. It seems like you've thought about your experience there and really, I mean, you're able to put it into words very well. Would you consider yourself a deep thinker?
Well, I would consider myself a thinker, maybe. a lot of thoughts running in your head. I read somewhere the other day that I think you have about 35,000 distinct thoughts every day. And, of course, that thought is just as simple as, this is a black cup. But, I mean, 35,000 is an incredibly high amount. Deep thinker. Socrates said, an unexamined life is not a life worth living. And I think... And I think that's the piece that we really have to lean into. I think there are moments of everybody's life where you stop living an examined life. You find comfort, and you think things are going smooth, and you stop focusing on what's important. You stop focusing on what it means to be human. You stop focusing on, you know, how you're improving yourself, and because it's nice, it's comfortable. You start taking things for granted, and they go away.
Right,
and so it's, you know, part of it, I think, is to be vigilant. I mean, and that's vigilant in life about what is important to you, because, you know, the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away, and that's quite all right. You know, that it's quite all right, but being vigilant about the pieces of your life that you care about and acting upon those is it's important. Mm-hmm.
Well, I watched your speech on YouTube that you gave about India, and that was a while ago. That was like 2013. So first of all, over there, the laws that govern trade and sale here in the United States aren't necessarily the case in India, correct? You can bargain for a lot of the things that you buy.
Yeah, bargaining is a key aspect of kind of their many of their capitalistic kind of endeavors, for sure. Yeah, so bartering's a key piece. I mean, many of those street vendors, it's not like they went to the, you know, the local Bureau of Economics or wherever you get your business license.
Yeah, they don't have an EIN number.
Yeah, exactly.
Like
they didn't go to the state of Maharashtra and apply for their business license, and they're gonna, you know, they see a white person, and frankly, you know, many of the students that I talk to, college age students, I can't wait to get to the United States. You're so blessed. You're so lucky. You know, it's just, you know, the view of the United States and just what we have over here in the West. Unfortunately, sometimes maybe we take it for granted. But like I said, you know, universal human feelings are universal human feelings. That doesn't change the context of how folks live. And some, you know, what might seem as more privileged than other folks, but yes, bartering. They got to make their livelihood. Mm-hmm. There, and so if they can get you to buy something for 150 rupees, they're going to get you to buy it for 150 rupees. If they get you to buy it for 50 rupees, they're going to get you to buy it for 50 rupees, mm-hmm. You know?
I've read about Americans going over to India, a decent amount, actually, and one thing that a lot of them say is, if you're white going over into India, some people say that you're treated nearly like royalty, and you're, at the very least, stared at a lot. You're an outsider, right? You're something new. You're interesting. And I've heard that can actually make buying things difficult because they assume that you're rich and they won't, you know, go down in price that much for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And comparatively, yeah, you're going to be viewed as rich, sure. When I was there, so that's 2013 or so, and I don't know what the exchange rate is now, but I mean, I was getting about 100 rupees, might be, maybe it was 50 rupees to a dollar. So one American dollar was about 50 rupees. I might be a little off on that, but just to give you the sense that I could go for breakfast for what would be the equivalent of maybe 45 cents here.
Are you kidding me? Really?
Yeah, my lunches were probably $2.50 if I was eating out. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, what was your experience like being white? Was there any truth to what I was saying? Like, are you treated like royalty? Are you treated specialty being white when you go to India? Or?
Well, I mean, depending on how you define special. But yeah, certainly, I mean, the rickshaw wallahs, which is just this little cart that you would drive around in, a little three-wheeled cart you get into. It's a taxi of sorts, but it's open-air taxi. I mean, they're not going to give you the deal that they're going to give a local. You know, I'd go around with my host mom, and obviously she's speaking the language fluently. She's obviously Indian. She's getting the deal. I go, take that same trip. She might have paid, you know, whatever for it, you know, 20 rupees, and I'm paying 30 rupees maybe, just depending on how that rickshaw wallah is treating you. Or they might take another road. Just like you go to New York City and the taxi cab drives you around, you know, four or five different extra blocks and raises that price, because you don't know. I wouldn't even consider that being taken advantage of. I think it's just, you know, people are opportunists, and if they see an opportunity, they're gonna take it. They gotta make their money.
Would you mind telling the story of the time that you had no money and you were walking by a stand where a gentleman was selling some things and he wanted you to, you know, hey, buy something from here? You said, I have no money. He said, come on, you gotta watch, you know, let's bargain or whatever. And then you said, you remember this?
Yeah. Well, you already mentioned a little goofy, and so that was probably just, you know, that's just my humorous aspect. I didn't know what to say next. I wasn't sure, so I was going to cloud myself in humor a little bit and move away from the conversation. I said, he told me his name was John, which is obviously just him trying to connect with me as a tourist. I don't believe his name was John. I said, John, I'm poor, and he stopped. And he just looked me in the eye and said, don't ever say that. Don't ever say that. Because this man walked his bag of goodies that he was trying to barter with me, trying to sell me, about 2 or 3 kilometers every day to get to this tourist spot to provide for his family. And he's selling these tourist trinkets that, you know, he's making them himself. And, you know, he's just scrapping, hustling left and right, trying to make 75 rupees here or 20 rupees there. And, you know, and it goes back to, of course, how they see us. I think relatively, if you look at how I grew up and my family here in the United States, I think many people would say that at best, we were lower middle class at best. That's pushing it. But over there, I had the opportunity to travel and live in a foreign country for 4 months. I had the opportunity to go to college. Sure, I had took out student loans, still paying them, about done with those.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was an opportunity, and that was a blessing given to me, that man had probably lived in his 4 kilometer radius his entire life. I mean, I don't know. I'm speculating. I have no idea. Well, and so just for me to say I'm poor to John, even though I was joking, I'm just frankly trying to get out of the conversation, again, wisdom of older folks. Look at the context, man. Look at where you're at. Look at who you are. You're going to sit here and tell me you're poor? It's humbling.
I really like that story. I do. It kind of reminds me where I'm at and where some other people are. Did it make you feel grateful for where you're at, but also at the same time bad for where other people are?
I mean, I think we got to be grateful every day, man. You got to rejoice in the day the Lord's given us. I mean, that's scripture. Rejoice in the day that you're given, and I think that's critical. It's like I said, good times, bad times. Feel bad for other people. I'm not sure that that's much of an emotion that I would have ever carried. It sounds to me that it's pity. It sounds to me like it's, oh man, that sucks to be you. Glad I'm over here. I'm not sure that's exactly the way to live life. I'm not sure that's exactly how we communicate with our and interact with our other fellow human beings. If we can prop them up, if I can make them smile, you know, and that's probably my fault. If I wasn't hiding in humor with John and was able to have a conversation with him and find some commonality where maybe I could have gotten him to smile that day, and maybe he didn't have to worry, and maybe for just a split second he didn't have to worry about putting food on the table for his kid. Just for a split second.
If you could have just made him smile for a second, like you said, this kind of leads me into the next thing you would do. You would work for the Big Brothers and Big Sisters organization. It's a nonprofit organization in Oklahoma. What was the transition like from India to the Big Brothers and Big Sisters? What happened?
Yeah, so India was my junior, spring semester of my junior year of college. And so then obviously I finished out college, so I had another year there. And then when I was a senior, I was looking for a job, because I was smart in college and picked an undergraduate that is English. So obviously the job offers were flowing in.
This is sarcastic, by the way.
That is, yeah. For all you listeners out there, that is sarcasm. And for all you folks that are in college, call me up. I'll tell you about what majors to choose and what not to choose. I mean, I know I love my English major. I went to college and I knew I wanted to go to a liberal arts college because I had a yearning for learning. And that's apparent.
I'm not surprised by that at all. That seems to really be the case.
I always told everybody that if I came back to Fairbury, Illinois, and I worked for Kafer Tilling and Ditch, like that's fine because it's continual learning. And I'd be the first to admit that I probably got off track on that continual learning journey. It's like planting a tree. Best time to do it was 10 years ago. Second best time's today. So I got my English degree and my minor in history and looking for jobs. And I thought, you know what, let's figure it out. You're an English major. You love education. You love schooling. City Year is an AmeriCorps program. Gave me an opportunity to be on the other side of the desk, see if I liked it. Worked with students, third through ninth grade, over down in Tulsa to kind of really help them in academics and math and English, behavior. Just kind of behavior goals, behavior charts, and then attendance, make sure they show up to school so that they can improve. So we worked with cohorts of about 6 to 7 kind of, we call them focus list kids, that were probably about a year and a half, 2 years behind where they should be in their kind of school curriculum, and really were kind of just that gap filler. I worked in ninth grade in algebra, so I get my English degree, and then I get thrown into an algebra class, which is fine. And so most of those kids, you know, they're trying to do algebra, y equals mx plus b, trying to figure out, you know, lines and, you know, central tenets of what algebra is. And many of these kids are just through various circumstances in their life, and, you know, schooling and a whole wide variety of instances that we experience here in the United States within our school systems. I mean, many of these kids couldn't add, you know, they're struggling to add what's 12 plus 10. And so that's where we worked within them.
Was it after class that you'd work with them or something?
Sometimes. I mean, we'd be there early in the morning before they got there, and we'd be one of the last to leave. I mean, it was grueling. I think we reported around 7:30, didn't leave till 6:30 at night. So, I mean, 12-hour days every day.
So you're helping these kids just to become better students.
I'm just trying to get them on track. Trying to get them on track. I mean, there are gaps that a lead teacher of a classroom of 30 folks, classroom of 30 students is never going to be able to, I mean, they're never going to be able to work with, you know, Devin in the back row who didn't get any sleep last night because he lives with his, you know, alcoholic uncle and was up all night, you know, berating his mom or, you know, and I'm just making up a story here, but just, you know, all the sorts of situations that a child or a student might go through that was going to impact their schooling. I mean, how do you be worried about how are you worried about having a pencil in class when you're sleeping under? I mean, I had a girl that came into class one day, and you could just tell something was off. You know, she had her walls up; she was guarded. You could tell. She came in, and you know, not 15 minutes into it, she blows up. It's just something minor happened. Pencil fell on the floor. Teacher called on her to answer a question. Blows up. Rant, yelling, stand up, screaming, I hate you. This is stupid. It's all reactionary to some of the traumas and some of the life that these students have to endure. And, you know, I took her out, had a conversation with her. Girl had been living under a bridge for 2 weeks. Had nowhere to go. No house. She's living with 35-year-old homeless men, just a little 12, 13-year-old girl, living under a bridge for 2 weeks. You gonna tell me you're gonna figure out what y equals mx plus b means?
Holy cow.
Got kicked out of her house. And this, you know, this is one example. It's not like I'm not trying to sit here and paint this picture that all inner city kids are all, you know, Tulsa's a great city. Tulsa's a wonderful city. And that doesn't mean that those sorts of experiences aren't happening right here in our, you know, own little hometown backyard of Fairbury, Illinois, and some of these students. I mean, it's all over the place.
Sure it is, yeah.
It's all over the place. But so that was part of the call. That was part of the call of us, the city, is to be that voice, to hear that, and then we turned to the professionals. I mean, we weren't trained professionals, but there's networks in many of these schools to be able to get them connected to the resources that are necessary.
What an important job you had. That's a hugely important job. And what sucks is the majority, I'll say, of schools, maybe even inner city schools, the majority of them, don't have people like you in those organizations that you were a part of in the classroom like that. There's a high likelihood that a student in a similar situation to that girl is going through the same thing, only without the help that you provided.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a lot of money that's being funneled outside of kind of what we consider our general public funding for these students and for these schools, because it's just not enough. I mean, it's just not enough to be able to tackle some of the problems that we ask schools to tackle when we send kids there for that long. I'm not going to go, there's a litany of resources, there's a litany of research, and there's people that are way smarter than me that are trying to tackle some of the problems that we face in our, American public school systems.
I think that's wise, that's mature of you to not say anything, actually, because it's a multifaceted, it's a complex issue some people would just be fools to think that they have it figured out and that they, like you said, there's smart people working on it, so I don't blame you one bit for not.
It's programs like City Year that let's try it. Education is political in this country. We need laboratories. We need laboratories of attempts to figure out what works and what doesn't work, and we have that. The funding streams and all those pieces. Those are. I mean, it's complex. It's complex, and I don't have the brains to have that conversation, and this podcast doesn't have time to have that conversation. Right. So,
well, why did you go into the Big Brothers and Big Sisters program in the first place? Did you see it? I doubt you saw it just as an opportunity to make some cash. It seems like there had to be a moral reason. There had to be some good reason that you went to do this. So why'd you go into this program?
You don't go into my line of work to make money. I'll tell you that much. But really, the mission that when I was there is to provide children facing adversity with one-to-one professionally supported mentoring relationships to change their lives for the better forever. Mm. So you're placing role models in the lives of children facing adversity, and that could mean a whole number of things. But the biggest group were young men 6 to 16 who did not have a father figure, who did not have a father in their life, did not have a male role model in their life. I mean, that was the biggest group. Of course, it's Big Brothers, Big Sisters, so there were, there's young girls in there who are in the program as well. But I was fortunate enough. I lost my father when I was a sophomore. My dad passed away. I was fortunate enough to have a lot of mentors just in my life, many minor mentors, nobody that, straight up said, I'm going to take you under my wing and I'm going to make you. I mean, Joe Cliff was on the podcast. There's no doubt. I mean, Joe Cliff, I consider him. Every time I see Coach Cliff, I say, Coach, thanks for not letting me quit wrestling. Thanks for not letting me quit. I walked into his office when I was a sophomore, I think. Coach, I don't like this. This is stupid. What am I doing? I don't want to do this. I only care about football. You don't say no to Joe Cliff. He more or less said, well, I'll see you down in the wrestling room. And so I wrestled for 4 years in high school there. But
were you a captain?
Oh, probably. I don't
know. I think you were. So, you don't remember?
I don't know. I assume so.
You were a captain.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, sure. I think so, yeah. Josh Smith probably was our best captain, I would say. I think we were a bunch of goof-offs. Smith took it seriously. Maybe we'll get Smith to listen to this. Josh, hope you're doing well.
Well, yeah, you had multiple mentors, though. You said minor ones, and no one really taking
you. I was fortunate enough to have, you make part of growing up in a small town, but I was just fortunate enough to have role models. So, and many of these kids in the Big Brothers, I'm still a mentor. Logan is my little right now, and we've been together for about 4 years, and his dad's in prison, and he's got a great mom, his grandma, and his grandpa's in his life and everything. But just have that friend, just have that person there who you can rely on, count on, and just be connected with in a way. I mean, that it does so much for the psyche. I mean, we have when I was at Big Brothers Big Sisters, and they still have it. They have data, reported scientific data says this improves lives. God, we don't need that data. We know it. Intrinsically, we know it, that you need a community. You need folks around you that are going to be able to support you, push you up, shoot you for goals, put some goals in front of you, and hold you accountable to them, and move you forward in life.
Yeah, man. Role models are seriously everything, and I might put this in, I might not, but this is really something I believe. You might passionately disagree with me. A lot of the time, in inner cities, this year, the data shows that 77% of black kids under 18 in the United States are fatherless. 77%, that's pretty nuts. In my personal opinion, I think a large amount of the problems that arise in inner cities, or that inner city students and just inner cities in general face, are a product of not having a positive role model in people's lives. That's what I think. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm not familiar with that. I'm not familiar with that statistic. I mean, I can confidently say that. I mean, this seems to be kind of a theme of this whole conversation. We need wisdom, you know, as human beings, we need wisdom. We need other human beings that are going to be there for us. And when you're a youth and you've been abandoned and you have feelings of abandonment and you have feelings of isolation, that's toxic. This can be a toxic spiral, and that's going to play out in ways that we just cannot imagine. So just having somebody there is critical.
It's absolutely critical. I couldn't agree more.
But that's why those programs exist. I mean, that's why those programs exist. So to get to kind of the next point of this thing, so now I currently work for the Tulsa Area United Way, which we are, you know, we connect people and resources to improve lives and build a better community. That's our mission statement at the Tulsa Area United Way. Really what we do is we fundraise to provide a social safety net for the Tulsa community. And that social safety net includes organizations like Big Brothers Big Sisters of Oklahoma, where we fund them in order to do their activities. We fund in education, health safety, and financial stability. Those are the three kind of building blocks, what we kind of consider the milk stool of a strong community.
Is a milk stool?
Well, a milk stool, you know. Milking a cow, if you take one of those legs out, you're going to fall over. You're not going to be able to milk the cow.
I see.
So, that's my Fairbury upbringing coming into my... Now, Tulsans will get that. Tulsans will understand that. But... You know, you take one of those building blocks out, and you're not gonna have a very successful community. And so we fund programs that help build that social safety net in order for programs like Big Brothers Big Sisters to find those volunteers and put them in the lives of these children. In order for programs like Women in Recovery, Oklahoma has the highest rate of incarcerated women in the world. Oklahoma puts more women in prison than anywhere else in the entire world. Imagine what that does to your family. Imagine what that does to a family. And many of these women, it's over. I don't know the exact statistic. Forgive me, folks in Tulsa, if you're listening to this. But I don't know. But many of these women, I would say it's probably over 70%. You know, I don't know exactly, but have children. And so imagine what that does to a family dynamic. We already talked a little bit about what isolation and what abandonment and loneliness is going to do. You're putting somebody in prison, and what's that kid going to do? Where's that kid going to turn? When his mom's out of the picture because she's in prison. And so we fund things like Women in Recovery that is an alternative to going to prison for some of these women that might be on their path to prison, and they stop them and they put them in this recovery program. And the success rate on that is national. I mean, it is a program that is being replicated across the nation because it is successful, because it works.
I was doing my research on the United Way in general. It has a perfect 4-star rating by some official...
Probably Charity Navigator.
Yeah. I think
Charity Star, Charity Navigator, one of those two, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a darn good organization is what I'm saying.
Yep.
Well, the bulk of my listeners on this podcast come from around this area, so a lot of them are going to know you personally. What is it that you did at United Way? It seemed like you were something like a businessman, largely. Or maybe you were a campaign accounts manager or something like that?
Yeah, that's my title. And then just this last campaign, I was interim director of workplace campaigns. And I guess probably for a lot of folks in the for-profit world, you can consider me kind of like an inside sales guy. I'm an account manager. I have a number of different accounts that run United Way campaigns, and I work with that company to ensure that they're putting on the best United Way campaign so that we can raise the most funds possible to then divvy back out to our nonprofit partner agencies.
Oh, well, that's a pretty quick way to put it.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Well, Chase, you talked about earlier how it's important not to get too comfortable, because then you're not thinking about what your next move is, among other things. So I want to ask, what are some of your plans or thoughts moving forward just in life? What is it that you're setting out to do? Is it a general thing?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I think, I think professionally, within my city here, I had the opportunity to go back to Oklahoma State University. I've just kind of been dragging my feet on that for a while, and so I'm considering going to get a master's of business administration. Keep those credentials up, make myself a little bit more valuable in the workplace, and that's certainly a key aspect. But in the last few months, I've always been a hard worker, and work's important, and I work in an organization where I'm grateful to be able to work for, and I'm making people's lives better every day because of the work that I do. But I think maybe just because I had my 29th birthday, there are other priorities in life than your job, and there's other things that you have to focus on, and I'm working on this, man. I mean, I'm not quite sure what that means going forward. Just kind of finding myself after this campaign. It was super busy, and obviously 2020 has been a rock for everybody's world. But I don't know the answer to that question, Paul.
Fair.
I know. I know when you got something important, you value it. When there's something important out there and that's in your life, you got to value it.
Man. Well, Chase, we're about to wrap this thing up, man. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we end this episode?
Yeah, no, thanks for having me on, Paul. I hope it's beneficial. I hope there's something in here that somebody can look at and say, maybe it changed their thinking, or maybe it gives them a little bit of cause to reflect on maybe their own life, or maybe it gets them to volunteer, maybe it gets them to donate to their local United Way, or donate or go volunteer with Big Brothers Big Sisters or some other organization, because there's a lot of good that we can do in this world. These last few months for my life with the United Way campaign have been a doozy, and there's a lot of movement, not a lot of time that I've been able to reflect. But I think it's cliche, but life's short, man. Life's short, and don't take the ups for granted. There's always going to be values, but don't take the ups for granted.
Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
You already mentioned kind of a happy-go-lucky kind of guy or whatever. 4 years ago, I had a broken cheekbone, and I've lived with chronic pain in my face ever since. Something unfathomable. Just never would have thought that this would be my life at 29. To be dealing with this kind of chronic health condition of sorts. And when you're dealing with some of these situations, we've already talked about human connectedness. That's important. And I'll be the first to say that with the chronic health condition and some of the kind of the mental struggles that just come on the tailwinds of it all, I really retreated into myself. Really thought, this is my problem. I need to deal with it by myself. Those sorts of scenarios, you can get into pretty toxic lifestyle. You can get into pretty toxic thoughts, self-demeaning thoughts, probably for about the last 4 years, I've had really kind of negative self-perception. You asked earlier, like, where are you going from here? And you see, they got the job and doing well and all that. But that's the piece that I have to work on and continually work on. I mentioned staying vigilant earlier about the things that are important to you. Your mental health's important. And, you can get in those toxic thoughts And when you're trying to do it with yourself and you're not letting other people in to assist, people that want to assist, and you just, you don't let them in, and you hurt yourself. Yeah. And you hurt those people that are trying to, they just want to help. Can't do this world alone, Paul. I mean, if that's the theme of this conversation, man. Human beings, I believe, are by nature good. We all have a little bit of trauma. We all have a little bit of backstory. We all got something in the cupboards and skeletons in the closet, stuff we sweep under the bed. But people want to help. And sometimes you just, sometimes you got to be a little vulnerable and let them help. I think it's Mumford & Sons has a line in one of their songs of just how freeing love can be. And when you find a way to love yourself and you find a way to let that love in, you're going to be free.
And what does it take to let that love in?
I mean, I think, you know, I've been going down a Christian journey over these last couple months. Really,
and you grew up very Christian, is that right?
All the listeners around here know that, I grew up Apostolic Christian, in the Fairbury Apostolic Christian Church there, and floated away, and it was always sitting in the back of my mind, and just never really focused on it, never really kind of, you know, went to the scripture to have those sorts of conversations and really think about, you know, I guess that's it. I mean, you asked earlier what's next in my life, and that's it. I mean, really, really grounding myself and building a foundation on faith, and on Jesus to just stop this spiral of negative toxic thoughts. I mean, the toxicity that is created when you try to go this life alone. Some problems are your problems, but people want to help. Let them help. You can't live your life with walls around your heart. I'll be first to admit that I've done that for a long time.
Put up walls.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's part of the humor, man. That's the humor. That's the jokes, the masks. It's the theater, all those things. You put up those walls and cause you're scared to let people, you're scared to, you know, it's a toxic thought to think, oh man, if other people really knew who I was, or if other people had if they knew, they'd get out of there. He's not, you know, this is the things that are going on in his brain, and these are the thoughts that he has. And obviously, you do it in a healthy manner. You don't go sharing everything on a podcast. You know, you find the right avenues for all that stuff. But
I do want to say, you said, you know, you find the right avenues to talk about these things in a way that so they're going to help people. And you said, you know, not on a podcast. I completely disagree. I think that the people that are going to listen to this and hear you, Chase, because you're Chase, talk about, you know, maybe some of the struggles you've dealt with the mental health that stems from the chronic pain. I think that's actually going to be a thing of relief for a lot of people. And it has been in the past. I had an episode with Joey Reese where he talked about his experience with bullying. And I had a good number of people message me that helped them a lot. And because they saw Joey went through that, they're reassured that they're human, that they're normal. And your vulnerability is going to benefit people without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Yeah, yeah. And, well, thanks. I hope so. I hope, you know, it's not, I mean, shoot, chronic pain sucks. I'll be the first to say that. It's terrible. And I've gotten good medical help, and it's improved over the last 4 years or so. I'm not going to sit here and say it's all doom and gloom. You know, you never know when it's going to flare up, and so you're always guarded, and you're kind of really unwilling to really open up with chronic pain because you don't know you start to question who you are because if you allow the pain to control you, and I think for a long time I was allowing the pain to control me because I couldn't control it. You know, I was an athlete and all that, so I always had good control of my body and all those pieces. And all of a sudden, here comes this thing out of left field, and I wasn't able to control it. And so I have. I'm not going to say that it's over. I have a big mental battle with that. And that's what I've learned probably over the last, honestly, 2 months, Paul. We have control over our thoughts. We have control over, you start to get that negative thought that comes in, and if you let it sit there and wallow in your brain, it's going to display itself in some pretty ugly and nasty ways, and it's going to hurt you, and it's going to hurt the people around you. It's going to hurt the people that might be trying to help. You know, I've ruined professional relationships because of it, because of the way that I've acted. I've certainly ruined private relationships because of it. People want to help, Paul. And it's not, and I'll be the first to say that's not easy. I understand that's not easy to let people help. You know, Brené Brown is the leading expert on vulnerability. And I've never read any of her books or anything, but I probably should, because that's how we heal.
Yeah, couldn't agree
more.
That's
how we heal.
Right there, yeah.
Mentally, within our heart, physically. Mm-hmm. I guess part of me finding faith, Paul, is we have a friend in Jesus. And because of that, we have some strength to make a difference about our mental health, to take control, and be better people because of it. No matter what trauma you might have experienced, no matter what health issue you're dealing with, no matter what circumstance, if you're scared of COVID, you're scared of your job or your relationship or your dog, you know, whatever situation you might be in, take control of your thought. Don't be afraid to let people help you. And with that, I mean, be vigilant about ensuring you're helping yourself.
Couldn't have said it better myself, man.
Yeah.
Chase Mallory, thank you very much for coming on. That was one of my favorite episodes I've done.
Thanks, Paul.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure.
And all great things must come to an end. If you enjoyed this episode, please feel free to share it on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or any social media platform. And if you'd like to support the podcast, you can head over to thegoldinfusionpodcast.com and donate as little as $1 if you'd like. If you're a small business who wants to have your business advertised in this podcast, again, just head over to thegoldinfusionpodcast.com and drop us a line in the ad spot section at the bottom of the homepage. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Gold Infusion Podcast. God bless and have a great week.